Glass and explained how the propagator for Simon's theory can be interpreted in terms of the volume form in the two-sphere. And that feeds back into our discussion of the linking number. So we want to be able to generalize things like the linking number to non-abelian gauge groups. So to do that, I have to explain the non-abelian analog of Wilson lines, Wilson loops. So this is a topic, well, we're studying it in the context of Chern-Simons theory, but it's like a very, very fundamental thing in any gauge theory. Wilson loops are like the most important observables in, you know, QCD. And I don't know if you've really discussed them before, so I think this is going to be an important thing for you guys to know in any context. So the first thing we need to understand is, so I'll do this in two ways. So the first approach will be solving some ODE. And the second will be given by an explicit formula. So the first approach is called parallel transport. So given UN or GLN gauge field, A on some manifold, we might as well take to be flat space, or M, and a path, gamma, from the interval, which is a some path starting at 0 and ending at 1, the parameter of this path will be called T, and the parallel transport is an n by n matrix P gamma A from Cn to Cn. Gee, I mean, out of curiosity, has anybody seen this concept before?
We saw it in GR, but not defined like that.
I see. So you'd also saw it in GR for the Levi-Civita connection?
Yeah.
Okay. So in which case, it's worth going to it in the more general case of an arbitrary connection, I imagine. So the way this is defined is, you define this as follows. So fix an initial vector v0 in Cn, and then we find a family of vectors v of t with initial conditions v0 is v0, and secondly d by dt v of t plus gamma star a v of t is equal to 0. Okay, so v is it's a vector depending on a single number. So this is an ODE. So recall, just to make it as concrete as possible, if A is a sum of matrices, say A X, that's A media X mu, A mu are n by a matrices, then gamma star A is some A mu gamma of T B gamma mu T T. So this whole expression here, this is a matrix which depends on T. And when I write this expression, what we're doing is we're saying the time derivative of V is given by multiplying V by that time-dependent matrix. This is a well, then we declare our so we define P gamma A of my initial vector, V0, is equal to V of 1, where V is as above. So now, well, the equation, the ODE on V, T, just says that V is covariantly constant along this path. Okay, any questions? Okay, so now for the explicit formula. Well, to start with, we need to get some motivation for where this formula comes from. You might think, suppose that A was a 1x1 matrix, and I had to solve that differential equation, I would solve it by taking the exponential of the integral of A. So there's a similar formula for when it's a matrix. It's called the path-ordered exponential. E gamma A is equal to the sum from n equals 0 to infinity of the integral, an iterated integral of t1 less than t2 less than tn of gamma star a t1 squared. So in this expression, these guys are ordered, but also inside the integral, I'm doing some matrix multiplication. Because this gamma star of A, you know, a differential form in one dimension, a one form is really a scalar. So I can just view this as a matrix valued function. When I'm doing matrix multiplication in the order indicated, the order matters. Here, matrix multiplication. Is happening inside. And I realize now I actually wrote things in the wrong order. There's some conventions. I think that's the, for the way I wrote the differential equation, this is the correct order. Okay. So why does this match? If this come from the solution of the PDE, of the ODE? The answer is, so consider the sum infinity of this iterated integral but now I'm going to take the upper bound to be some number t. So we want to show that this satisfies the ODE defining the parallel transport. So just so I won't have to write out this expression again, I'm going to define this to be path ordered exponential integral from 0 to t gamma star a. Well, to check that, let's calculate d by dt now if I look at this sum, the only way it depends on t, it's just the range of integration. So if I vary t a little bit, I'll pick up a term where this top guy, it's tn, and that's the derivative, just by the fundamental theorem of calculus. This is sum gamma star a of t. And the same kind of integral. So this is the differential equation, except the fact that I got a sign wrong. Okay, any questions? Right, so this is something we associate to an open path. It's a matrix associated to an open path. If I have a closed loop, I take the trace of this matrix, and that's the non-abelian Wilson line. So I think, I'm sorry for the sign error. I think maybe I put a minus one to the end in here, and might fix the sign error. I think. Okay. Any other questions?
This gamma A, gamma star A, is it different form or the components of a different form? When you write gamma star A, but I think in the ODE, it is the component of the.
Right. Well, in the one, because it's a differential form on the line, there's really no difference between a differential. It's a one form on the line, so the space of one forms on the line, the basis of dt. there's no difference. All tensors on the line prevail.
Sorry, I don't understand. Because in some sense, gamma star recommends to as f prime dt. F is a function like the derivative. So in OD, it should be derivative, not the full differential.
No, this is the right formula for the ODE. So I mean, gamma star A is not literally a derivative. It's like a product of d gamma dt with something,
yes,
which depends on t.
Yes. So my question is, does the in the ODE, does that term contains dt that gamma star A vt?
Yes, but I mean, okay, so I'm being a bit loose, right? I'm just using the fact that by gamma star A there, really, I mean gamma star A like divided by dt.
Oh, okay.
So I've stripped off the dt at the end.
Oh, okay.
So this is a reasonable thing to do because we're in one dimension. Another way to say it is, instead of writing d by dt of v, I could say the Durham operator of v. So I could put the dt next to d by dt, and that would be a better way to do it. So why don't I do that? Okay.
Yeah, I see.
So any other questions?
So you don't have the one over, or the n factorial here because you've chosen the ordering?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. So the the volume of the set of n points and ordered points on the line is one over n factorial. Because the volume of the cube is one and there's n factorial ways. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so this definition that given a closed loop, gamma to Rn or M, where gamma of 0 equal to gamma of 1, the non-abelian Wilson line Wilson loop is the function of A, which sends A goes to the trace of the parallel transport from one side to the other. So this is equal to the sum over N, the trace of this . So here, I'm multiplying these matrices together. I just multiply them all and take the trace. So the picture you should have in mind is I have this circle. This is the starting point, and I take n points, and each point I put this matrix. And then I'm multiplying them all according to the order of the points of the circle. Okay, so we'd like to show that this quantity is gauge invariant.
Doing the Wilson loop, using the Wilson line, have the same geometric idea, but not take the trace.
Exactly, yeah. And it's often useful to think of an infinite Wilson line. It's another nice observable in the theory. Okay. So, proposition. Wilson loop is gauge invariant. Thus, the proof is we need to show, first show, that this quantity, the parallel transport, on an open path, is gauge covariant. That if we change A by a gauge transformation, AX, which is X inverse BX plus X inverse AX, then the parallel transport of this new gauge field is obtained by multiplying on each side by X evaluated at the endpoints. So I want to apologize right now. In fact, there is, again, some choice of conventions. Does the inverse happen here, or does it happen here? I don't quite recall. We'll see as we go to the calculation which side it happens on. So this equation will be enough to show that it's gauge invariant. So if this holds, and if gamma of 0 is equal to gamma of 1, then the trace of P gamma AX is the trace of X gamma 1 P gamma A X gamma 0 minus 1. And because it's a trace, I can move this to the other side. And here, because I assume the two endpoints are the same, this is trace the parallel transport. Now, to check this equation, what we need to do is check, suppose I take my solution of the ODE defined by A, and I hit it with the matrix X, what ODE does it satisfy? And it turns out to satisfy the ODE defined by this one. Well, I think I will hit it with the matrix X inverse. So now, suppose V of T satisfies ET del T V of T plus gamma star A V of T equals 0. Now, and consider x inverse gamma of t minus 1 v of t. We claim that this will satisfy the equation for y replace a by its gate transformation. So call this v of x.
Can we put the middle one on top and the one you just raised in the middle?
Okay, is the top not so visible?
Yeah, it's not so visible.
Too much glare.
It's a very.
Okay. Is that okay? So let's check this. I'm hoping I'm going to get all the signs right and everything, but you'll see it's actually pretty straightforward.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Why do I have to go through that whole process? It just pops out of exponentiation. If I just literally plug in that A, exponentiation would do the job.
But it's not an exponent. It's not. If you want to use this formula.
Yeah, I just plug it in, and then.
It's not that easy, actually. Because everything is time dependent.
Okay.
So you can do it this way too, but then there's if I vary x by a gate transformation. Think of terms like this, which I'm going to stick in the middle. And then I'm going to do an integration by parts over the various things in the middle, and some things will cancel. I'm left with this stuff at the end. So you can't actually. I think it's more common. I don't know. I think this way is easier. So let's calculate d by dt x gamma t. Minus 1 v of t is equal to d by dt x gamma t So now if you look at this term, for any matrix, d by dt x inverse is, with usual formula, if this was a scalar, you would find minus x to the minus 2 d by dx. But for a matrix, that's not true. The x inverses go on either side. And now here we note this is good. because this is x inverse dx restrict. This is gamma star of x inverse dx. Once I've included the dt's. So this whole thing becomes gamma star minus gamma star x inverse dx times x inverse b plus x inverse is going to be minus, because now I'm going to use the differential equation satisfied by v. Minus x inverse a of v is equal to minus gamma star inverse dx x inverse v minus x inverse a x inverse v. Okay, so d by dt of x inverse v is satisfies. I have this gauge field instead. So, dt x inverse v is equal to plus a of x gamma star a of x inverse v equals 0. Okay, any questions? This is like a completely elementary calculation. Wait, so what have we determined? That if I take my solution of the original differential equation for A and multiply by x inverse, it satisfies the differential equation for A of x. So as a corollary, that this implies that, well, what's the path ordered, or what's the parallel transport for the gauge transformed A applied to x inverse of gamma 0 is equal to x inverse of gamma 1. Let me get this right. So hold on. I messed up. So let me write it. I found myself slightly confused, but it's something really, really simple. So v of 1 is the parallel transport for gamma a applied to v of 0. And x gamma of 1 inverse applied to v of 1 is the parallel transport for gamma a of x applied to x gamma 0 minus 1 v of 0. So this tells us the parallel transport for this guy is obtained by multiplying on the left by x gamma of 1 and on the right by x gamma of 0 inverse. You have this equation. E gamma a is equal to x gamma 1 b gamma a x gamma 0 inverse as desired. Okay, any questions? And I hope I'm not being too repetitive, but yeah.
So yeah, this is the this is the inverse of this.
Let's see. So let's look at that equation. Which one is correct? So this one is not. It's the other one. this one. Right, because I multiplied fingers over there. Yeah, any other questions? So I want to now explain another important feature of parallel transport, which is that if the curvature vanishes, then the parallel transport does not change if we change the path a little bit. And this is going to imply that in Chern-Simons theory, or on shell, the curvature vanishes. You might expect these Wilson lines to be topological invariants. They don't depend, they don't change if I change my knot a little bit. So if f of a is equal to 0, then p gamma a does not change. If we change gamma a little, say continuously, while fixing the endpoints. Here's the idea. So any small change, so any continuous variation is built by repeated modifications of the following form. So I take my path gamma. Gamma, and I modify it just a little bit by adding on this is some very small square. We change a path by, instead of going on this little segment, which is very small, we go around this, the outside of the square instead. So the question amounts to, so the parallel transport of here can be thought of as I go from here to here, I go around here, and then I go back that way. So the question amounts to, if I go around a very small square, do I get the identity matrix? Square of size epsilon, we get the identity plus epsilon squared the curvature. From the parallel transport. So let's check this. So this calculation might as well just happen in a single plane, because this very small square just lives in one plane. So we might as well work on OR2. With the gauge field A. And their coordinates x and y. And we'll consider P gamma A, where gamma is I'm going to draw it a little bigger, but I want to remember it's supposed to be small. Use the axis. Gamma is a path which goes like this. Okay. So any questions about this strategy before we do the calculation? Yeah?
Sorry, why is it has to be the identity plus epsilon square F?
Well, I guess the question, why is the leading term the identity?
I don't know. Why do we have that? Are you like perturbing?
So we're considering, suppose I do a very small variation of my path, and I'm considering how the parallel transport changes, and I'm analyzing this question in series in the area that I've added. So the area is epsilon squared. And we're finding that the leading order is the curvature, so that the curvature vanishes. The leading order contribution to the modification just vanishes. But because this happens for any modification, it's like a differential equation on the path order exponential. Okay, so I like this calculation because it tells us the curvature has this funny formula. Where does it come from? And the formula is, it is just path order exponential on this square. So let's plug in the path order exponential. Well, it's easy to check that to order epsilon, the parallel paths cancel. To order epsilon, you know, the path order exponential is going to be a bunch of points. And if I have n points, because the paths are each of length epsilon, n points will contribute order epsilon to the n plus higher orders in lower orders. So if it's to the order epsilon contribution can only come from one point going around, and then I get this integral here, and that integral there, they cancel, and these two guys cancel too. So the first non-trivial contribution is order epsilon squared. And there's two possibilities. If there's one point going around, there are two points going around. One point. I'll drop the axis and just draw my square. So if one point, which is on the vertical lines, Well, so here, if that's at some point there, this will be a y of the y x-axis is 0, 0 b times epsilon. R could be at this point here, because these integrals are done in opposite orders, I get minus 9 minus a y epsilon p times epsilon. Can people see this blackboard here? So what's essential is that I'm taking the difference between the two paths, and the two paths have position shifted by epsilon. So the difference between them is to leading order epsilon times the derivative in the x direction. So this looks like del x a y 0 p epsilon. There's a minus sign actually, minus epsilon del x a y 0 t epsilon. And then I want to integrate this from t equals 0 to 1. We integrate from t equals 0 to 1. 1 of minus epsilon del x a y. Well, because epsilon is very small, what we're finding, let me write it better like this, integral from t equals 0 to epsilon. Because epsilon is very small, and this integral the leading order in epsilon, all I'm going to pick up is the value at the origin. So this is like minus epsilon squared del x a y plus o epsilon cubed. Okay. So similarly for the other path, the horizontal paths, give plus epsilon squared del y ax. Okay, any questions about what we have so far? Yeah.
Why does the order epsilon have to do with the expansion of the path order, of the order of the expansion in the path order exponential?
Oh, you see, why aren't we finding terms with like n points moving around?
Yeah, why an order? Oh, because you have two integrals.
Sorry. Yeah. So, because we're integrating from 0 to epsilon, so for every time I add a point, I get a factor of epsilon plus lower order terms coming from the derivatives of the gauge fields. So, and I hope you recognize if this is this visible here? Yeah. Let me move this up to the middle. So what we found so far are like is one of the two of the terms in the curvature of A. Because the curvature is del x a y minus del y a x plus a x a y. We find some of the terms. So now we need to find the rest of them. If I have 2 points on the square, we get an order epsilon squared from two integrals on the interval from 0 to epsilon. But the gauge field is A is its value with the origin plus the order plus O epsilon. So only just by Taylor's theorem, so to order epsilon squared, only the value and not derivatives will appear. So let's look at the contributions. It's not a very good square. So we have 2 points, P1, P2. So, and P1 is less than P2. And if P1 is on the x-axis, and P2 is on the y-axis, then we get AX, AY with a sign. So let's, and if the other way, if P1 is on the y-axis and P2 is on the x-axis, then we get AY, AX, because it's ordered by first P1, then P2. So let's look at all the terms that appear, and you'll find the other terms in the curvature. And probably there's some chance I'm going to get a sign wrong. So for example, if P1 is on x, P2 is on y, there are 3 ways this can happen. This is x, this is y, P1 could be there, P2 could be there, or P1 could be there, P2 could be there, or P1 could be there, P2 could be there. So these two guys cancel because that guy integral goes that way and that integral goes that way. So two have opposite signs. So we're left with the first one, which has a positive sign. So similarly, well, if P1 is on the y-axis and P2 is on the x-axis, there's only one way for that to happen. The only way for that to happen, because my path starts there, and P2 is after P1, is that P1 is there, and P2 is there, one way. But this gets a minus sign because I'm integrating backwards in this path. Is minus AY AX. So putting everything together, that we find that the path orthogonal exponential, or the parallel transport, is equal to the identity, comes from no points, plus epsilon squared times contributions over there give me del y ax minus del x ay. Okay, so I think maybe I dropped a sign or a factor of two. But... this is like identity plus epsilon squared times the curvature. Then a little bit rushier at the end. So in sum, if we vary my path a little bit, the leading order in the size of the variation, this path ordered exponential varies by integrating the curvature over the surface connecting the two regions, plus lower order terms. This gives you a differential equation, which tells you that if the curvature vanishes, then the path ordered exponential does not depend, right, does not change if I change my path a little bit. Okay, any questions?
Can we use this in general if we have non-zero curvature to say, oh, if I change my loop, now I know how much I've...
Yeah, absolutely. You get a differential equation on the space of loops.
And it doesn't depend on how we modify the loop, or it depends?
It does, because I'm taking my curvature has two legs, right? So that it gives you an area form on the surface, which I modify, like the direction I'm modifying in it.
Yeah, so in higher dimensions. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One more question. Where do we call what do you call Wilson loops, non-abelian Wilson loops? Is it not possible to do it with T1?
Yeah, I mean it's the same. These are really just called Wilson loops. I call them non-abelian to emphasize that in the group U1, we already explained with a simple formula. In that case it was just an exponential of the integral of the gauge field. But here we have to, because the gauge field is non-abelian, that formula doesn't quite work. Any other questions?